watched the Gelo, the Paha, the Pila, her creatures, as they guided the Sorrow fleet toward battle once more. "Mistress," the Gelo detection officer announced, "we are approaching the water world at 1/4 light speed per your instructions." Krat acknowledged with a bare flick of her tongue, but secretly she was happy. Her egg was healthy. When they won here, she would be due to go home and mate once more, and the crew of her flagship was working together like a finely tuned machine. "The fleet is 1 paktar ahead of timetable, mistress," the detection officer announced. Of all the client species owing allegiance to the Sorrow, the Gelo were special to Krat. They were her own species' first clients, uplifted by the Sorrow long ago. The Gelo had in their turn become patrons as well, and brought 2 more client races into the clan. They had made the Sorrow proud. The chain of uplift went on. Deep in the past had been the progenitors who began galactic law. Since then, race had aided race to sentience, taking indentured service as payment. Many millions of years ago, the ancient Luber had uplifted the Puber, or so the library said. The Luber were now long extinct. The Puber still existed somewhere, though now degenerate and decadent. Before their decadence, though, the Puber raised up the Hull, who in turn made clients of Krat's stone-chomping Sorrow ancestors. Shortly thereafter, the Hull retired to their home world to become philosophers. Now, the Sorrow themselves had many clients. Their most successful upspring were the Gelo, the Paha, and the Pila. Krat could hear the high voice of the Pila tactician, Kubber Kabub, haranguing its subordinates to coax information she wanted from the shipboard mini-library. Kubber Kabub sounded frightened. Good. It would try harder if it feared her. Alone of those aboard, the Pila were mammals, short bipeds from a high-gravity world. They had become a powerful race in many galaxy-wide bureaucratic organizations, including the important Library Institute. The Pila had raised clients of their own, bringing credit to the clan. Still, too bad the Pila were no longer indentured clients. It would have been nice to meddle with their genes again. The furry little sophants shed and had a bothersome odor. No client race was perfect. Only 200 years ago, the Pila had been thoroughly embarrassed by the humans of Earth. The affair was difficult and expensive to cover up. Krat did not know all of the facts, but it had something to do with the Earthling's son. Since then, the Pila had hated humans passionately. Krat's mating claw throbbed as she thought of Earthlings. In just a few generations, they had become almost as great a nuisance as the sanctimonious Kanton, or the devil trickster Timbrimey. The Sorrow patiently awaited an opportunity to erase the blot on their clan honor. Fortunately, humans were pathetically ignorant and vulnerable. Perhaps the chance had already come. How delicious it would be to have Homo sapiens assigned to the Sorrow as indentured foster clients. It could happen. Then what changes could be made? How humans might be molded? Krat looked at her crew and wished she were free to meddle, alter, shape at will, even those adult species. So much could be done with them. But that would require changing the rules. If the upstart water mammals from Earth had discovered what she thought they had, then the rules might be changed. If the progenitors had indeed come back from the mists of time. How ironic that the newest spacefaring race should discover this derelict fleet. She almost forgave dolphins for existing, for giving those humans the status of patrons. "Mistress," the tall Gelo announced, "the Jofer-Thenanin Alliance has broken up, fighting among themselves. This means they are no longer preeminent." "Maintain vigilance," Krat sighed. The Gelo shouldn't make too much out of one little act of treachery. Alliances would form and dissolve until one emerged supreme. She intended that that force be sorrow. The dolphins must be here. When she won this battle, she would pry the handless ones out from their underwater sanctuary and make them tell all. With a languid wave of her left paw, she summoned the pill librarian from its niche. "Look into the data on these water creatures we pursue," she told it. "I want to know more about their habits, what they like and dislike. It is said their bonds to their human patrons are weak and corruptible. Give me a lever to pervert these dolphins." Cupperkabob bowed and withdrew into the library section with the rayed spiral glyph above its opening. Krat felt destiny all around her. This place in space was a fulcrum of power. She didn't need instruments to tell her that. "I will have them. The rules will be changed." Chapter 13 Toshio. Toshio found Satata by the bole of the giant drill tree. The fin had been thrown against the monstrous plant and crushed. Her harness was a jumble of broken pieces. Toshio stumbled through the ruined undergrowth, whistling a trinary call when he felt able. Mostly, he tried very hard to stay on his feet. He hadn't walked much since leaving Earth. Bruises and nausea didn't help much. He found Kehith lying on a soft bed of grass-like growth. His harness was intact, but the dolphin planetologist had already bled to death from 3 deep gashes in his belly. Toshio made a mental note of the spot and moved on. Closer to the shore, he found Satima. The little female was bleeding and hysterical, but alive. Toshio bound her wounds with flesh foam and repair tape. Then he took the manipulator arms of her harness and used a large rock to pound them into the loam. It was the best he could do to bind her to the ground before the 5th wave hit. It was more a flooding than a wave. Toshio clung to a tree as it flowed past, tugging at him and rising almost to his neck. As soon as the wave began to recede, he let go and floundered over to Satima. He groped until he found the catch on her harness, then released her to float in the growing back tow. He pushed hard to join the flood and keep from being left behind. He was struggling to shove her around a clump of shrubs against the growing pull of the backwash when a swift motion in a tree overhead caught his eye. The movement didn't fit into the overall pattern of swaying subsidence. He looked up and met the gaze of a pair of small black eyes. There was little time for more than a startled double take before the tide pulled him and Satima straight through the obstruction and into a small, recently made marsh. Toshio was suddenly too busy to look anywhere but straight ahead. He had to pull Satima down the last few yards of slippery sea plant, taking care not to reopen her wounds. In the last few minutes, it had seemed she was more lucid. Her delphin squeakings were starting to take on form and sound like trinary words. A whistle brought Toshio's head up. Kipiru was only 40 meters offshore, driving the sled toward him. The fin had on a breather, but he could still signal. "Satima!" Toshio shouted to the wounded dolphin. "Go to the sled! Go to Kipiru!" "Lash her to an air dome," he called to Kipiru. "And keep your eye on that sonar screen. Get back out there when you see a wave coming." Kipiru tossed his head. As soon as Satima was 100 feet out, he used the sled to herd her toward deeper water. 5 accounted for. That left Hist and Hikahi. Toshio climbed back up the sea plant and stumbled into the undergrowth once again. The territory of his mind seemed as torn up and desolated as the island he trod upon. He had seen too many corpses for one day, too many dead friends. He realized now that he had been unfair to the Finns all along. It had been unjust to blame them for teasing him. They couldn't help the way they were built. All of man's genetic meddling notwithstanding, dolphins had been dealing with humanity on a level of good-natured derision since the first person paddled a log canoe out to sea.